Welcome to Conversations Live. For more than a decade, we've brought you the best in books, entertainment, and current events. When the movers and shakers of the world have something to say to you, they say it to us first. Now, here's your host, Cyrus Webb.
And welcome back, everyone, to Conversations Live. I'm your host, Cyrus Webb. Glad you all could join us once again, whether you're tuning in on the radio dial in Mississippi at WYAD 94.1 FM or through WYADonline.com. We're glad you all could be with us. Also, those tuning in through our online affiliates around the world, including Conversations Radio Network. We're glad you guys could be with us as well. You know, I talk to you guys all the time about being able to learn lessons from the world around you, and our next guest has been able to do that in an amazing way. I'm really excited to welcome author Meredith May to our program today. She's written a book called The Honey Bus, a memoir of loss, courage, and a girl saved by bees. We'll talk to Meredith not only about family, but also about being able to be in tune with her surroundings, to learn lessons from things that sometimes we may take for granted, and of course, what she wants all of you all to know about her journey. Meredith, hello to you, and welcome to the program.
Hi, Cyrus. Thank you for having me on.
Hey, the pleasure is definitely all mine. So much great stuff in this book, Meredith, for us to be able to talk about. And I was telling you before we went on here that I found myself just smiling at certain places, because even though there are parts, you know, of heartache and, you know, and of course difficult times, there are also some amazing lessons that do come, as I said, in unexpected ways. What was it like for you to kind of bundle all of this together in The Honey Bus?
You know, it didn't come out clean the first time I wrote it. I didn't quite understand how important the bees were for me. At first, I was just writing family stories and sort of mimicking my heroes like Jeanette Wall's The Glass Castle or Mary Carr with The Liars Club. And it wasn't until my grandfather passed away while I was working on this book and I inherited his bee equipment and I started keeping bees again. I actually put them on the roof of the San Francisco Chronicle where I was working. And when I held bees again in my hands and I felt their vibration and I smelled them, they smell like warm toast and butter, and I heard their hum, I just got really emotional. And I realized that's my story. That is what I need to explain to people. I've got this really unusual connection with these stinging insects. And, right, you know, there's been a lot written about bees. It's either how-to books or it's sort of magic realism like Secret Life of Bees. And I wanted to be in this new lane in between the two, like showing you the magic and but stuff that's real and only things that a beekeeper sees.
You know, I think the big takeaway for me, and I think it comes across in many ways in the book for myself, Meredith, when I was reading it, is that, you know, being able to look beyond what we might expect. And I say that not only, of course, with just the bees, and people have their own idea, myself living in the South, and, you know, bees in my area are not something that are looked at very fondly. They looked at kind of as a nuisance, you know, to put it lightly. But I think also to think about what we can learn, right? Because I think one thing that comes across, and I'm curious as to your thoughts about this, Meredith, did you know going into this, you mentioned, of course, the story that we now have is not what initially began, but did you realize that there were so many similarities between bees and our own journey that kind of connected you as well?
When I started, no. In fact, when the first drafts of this book didn't really have, bees were like a little spice in the cake. They were just popping in and out like set decoration, really. And as I started beekeeping again, I would see these, what the bees were doing. I'd watch them behave and watch them care for each other and put themselves in danger for each other. And all these memories started coming back about stories Grandpa would tell me about how bees solve problems when I was a little girl helping him work. And also, I'm 49, so I'm about the age he was when I showed up on his door as a five-year-old. And I started thinking about that, and I realized, wow, he was really clever. He was taking this lonely girl and helping her by telling her these bee metaphors. And I only realized it as an adult looking back as I was writing. So it was a really organic process, a slow one, though. It took me 10 years to get this to the place where it needed to be.
Right. I love the fact how you're able to share, you know, what you have observed with others. In chapter 12 of the book, you were in year 1982, Meredith. The title of the chapter is Social Insect, and you actually write this, and for those who have the print edition of the book, it's found on page 234, as you were kind of being able to give some background as to these creatures. You write this talking about the bees. There's a queen but no king, but the queen isn't the ruler. All the bees work and make decisions together. Bees are loyal and generous, but they also have a brutal side and will toss out the weak, the sick, and the males once they become useless to the community. Bees have their own language and will hum with delight, shriek in distress, fall silent with grief, and growl with menace when threatened. Even the queen has her own special battle cry when rivals challenge her throne. You know, I love the fact that you're kind of describing this and what it felt like to be able to embrace the confidence that that knowledge gave you. Did you know at the time, though, when you were even sharing that, Meredith, that, again, going back to in describing those bees, you were describing what is day-to-day life for so many of us?
Yeah, when I was writing it, you know, the final versions as an adult, yes, and I knew exactly what I was trying to do, and I'm trying to write a story that explains the moral necessity of bees. We all know ecologically we need them to continue to eat, but I don't think people know we need them because they are the opposite of a dysfunctional family. They're a perfect social unit. They're a benevolent society. And we can learn a lot about how to be a good person by watching them.
You mentioned your grandpa, and if we get too deep into that, you definitely just let me know and we can move on. But I think one of the connections I made, I was raised by my grandmother, and so I lost her now 5 years ago. And the thing that I thought was so interesting in reading about your grandpa, she taught me a lot of lessons about life. And so when I was reading the book, I think that was another one of the connections I felt with that. There's another thing I want to read, and it kind of goes to what you were talking about when it comes to the honey itself. And again, this is something that might, again, may slip by us, but I think in thinking about life for us and where we find connections, I think it'll mean something for our audience, Meredith. It's in Chapter 8, First Harvest, going back to 1976. You wrote this talking about the honey. The honey glowed in my hands like a living, breathing thing. It was warm. And I loved it because it made sense when nothing else did. It was a pure example of what Grandpa had been trying to explain inside the bus, that beautiful things don't come to those who simply wish for them. You have to work hard and take risks to be rewarded. You go on to write this: all of us, humans and insects in our separate ways, had traveled far, navigated dangers, and labored to exhaustion for a shared obsession. We made this honey because we believed we could. I mean, talk to me about that reminder and that moment and what that was like for you to kind of see the things you were being taught kind of coming together.
My grandfather had an old World War II army bus that was marooned in the backyard, and he had gutted it and built his honey factory inside, and that is the honey bus. And that's the bus on the cover of the book. And I would help him bottle honey every summer in there, and he built his honey factory out of old spare junk. He was also a plumber, so there's a lot of spare junk in the yard. And, you know, the spinner was powered by an engine he'd ripped out of a lawnmower. And so it was kind of like this steampunk sanctuary, and we would shut the door and we'd work all day in there, and it was, I could talk about, both of us, we could talk about our feelings without anyone listening. And when I was writing the scenes of working with Grandpa as a child in the bus, it was a really deep experience for me because I was figuring out what my grandfather was doing for me after he had passed. Like, I didn't have a chance to go back and tell him, oh, Grandpa, you know, I see what you did for me. I see how you saved me, and I see how you showed me initiative. But it was never overt. It was always by example, and it was by storytelling. And he let me figure it out in my own time. And that's kind of what I was trying to do with the book, too. I was laying out stories and letting the readers draw their own conclusions, and then that way they feel intelligent so they can draw from it. And a funny thing is, I didn't focus. Well, one thing that surprised me in terms of the reaction to the book was how many people are really responding to the granddaughter-grandpa bond. And that was such a given for me in telling this story that I didn't realize how that was going to resonate. But that's almost emerging as the main thing that people are loving about this. I love that too.
Yeah. Well, I think it goes back to what I was mentioning earlier, Meredith. I think, you know, it's a connection, right? I mean, it's and where that connection can be found. You know, for you, it was the honey bus, and for others, I think it will make them think about who was that person for them. For some of us, it's educators. I can remember being in art and having my art teacher share lessons with me and to kind of build confidence, and we're going to talk more about confidence because it shows up in this book. But I think, you know, just being able to reflect on that is so important. I want to say for those who are just tuning in, either on the radio side or online, you're listening to Conversations Live. Excited to welcome author Meredith May to our program today. We're talking to Meredith about her new book, The Honey Bus, a memoir of loss, courage, and a girl saved by bees. You know, you and I were having a conversation earlier when I was talking about the podcast of this, Meredith, and you know, you were talking to me about, you know, having an author page on Facebook, right? And so has it kind of sunk in now, because writing is a part of your story. You talk about that even in the book, about writing and what that was like for you to experience that and to share it. Has it kind of sunk in with you now that you are author Meredith May?
Yes and no. I mean, there are really funny moments when I realize that the earth has shifted under my feet. I was just so happy that first to find an editor that wanted to publish the book, and that it got published. But then that people are responding to it, and is really just so gorgeous. I'll tell you a couple stories when I realized that, oh gosh, I am an author with a capital A. I'm getting some emails from friends, and they're saying that they're seeing the book in Costco, and that to me just seems like a really super big deal. So I'm gonna go take a field trip to Costco and take a picture. You know, like I do all these goofy, you know, first time author things where I'm doing selfies wherever I see the book, but I am in the middle of a book tour. I was in a hotel in Beverly Hills. It was super swanky. It's one of those hotels that turns into a club at night. You know, music is pumped in from all over. And there was a fire alarm at 11. And, of course, I'm asleep. But all of the people my age and above who sleep are in their bathrooms going down the stairwell, and they lead us down to the club. So here we are in our bathrobes with all these 20-year-olds who have just started their night with these fancy drinks in their hand. And I'm thinking, oh, this is just too much. I am partying in my bathrobe in Beverly Hills at a club. I must be, something must have changed because this is not my life. But that was like a giggle moment. Yeah.
Wow. I bring that up for another reason, because there is another lesson that you're able to get from your grandpa, and that is about looking ahead, about the future. I had that same conversation with my grandmother, and you know, and thinking about life. And you talked about the initial fear that I think it comes with anyone who thinks about, you know, having to move on, right? And you're having that mm-hmm. moment that turns into a question about going to college, you know.
Mm-hmm.
What was that like for you to kind of look at decision points like that, that, you know what, there's a whole life out there, just like for the bees, there's a whole life out there for you to explore?
I remember that when Grandpa was kind of suggesting I need to think about what happens after high school. And I remember being a little terrified at the concept because I hadn't thought of it. My my mother lived in the house, in my grandfather's house. He was not her dad. He's a stepfather. But my mother is very volatile. She's a depressive. She was in bed, and we all tiptoed around her needs and moods. And so I mainly was just trying to get through it and survive, and I didn't, therefore, have time or energy or the concept that I should be thinking forward to the future. So yeah. That was scary. And however, my grandmother was a super practical, almost to a fault woman, and she volunteered at the Career Center at my high school with the sole purpose of stealing the applications for scholarships so that I could fill them out at home before the other students knew they existed. So she was a bit of a well, you know, how she got from point A to B was well-meaning, but sometimes just not the best. But once I was in college, I quickly realized that I had so much maturity catching up to do compared to other students who had been bolstered and prepared for this their whole life. So I was pretty scared through my first and second years of college. But again, there was another person who became part of my alternative family, and that was my first journalism teacher who really helped me. And to this day, she still mentors me. She's a wonderful woman. I'm going to say her name, Sarah Pollock, yeah, at Mills College. So I was really good at seeking out people who could sort of sniff out that something was amiss in my background and were willing to help me.
Yeah. You know, I'm not going to spend a lot of time on this part, but just to kind of add another layer to this conversation that I think our audience will find as a conversation piece, is your relationship with your mother, Meredith. And again, we don't have to talk much about this, but I thought it was interesting that, you know, it's again, going back to being raised by my grandmother, who was my mom's mom. Had a much closer relationship with my grandmother than I had with my mom. It's better now, I'm glad to say. Mm-hmm. We're in a really good place. Was that one of the most difficult parts of the book, writing about your mother and reflecting on the interactions that ended up in the book?
I'm going to be really honest and say no, that was probably the easiest. And I know that sounds the opposite of what you would hear, but My mother was so checked out of my life that I knew that she would probably not even read this book if it were published. She didn't read my first book or know about it, even though, you know, I had mentioned it. She just really was not engaged. Also, she passed in 2017, so her health was always very poor, but my grandmother died in 2015, my grandfather died in 2015, my grandmother 2016, and then my mother 2017. So that also negated the need to, you know, run it by my mom, but it just wasn't difficult because it's just the bald truth, and yeah, I'm okay with that. And I feel good talking about it.
Got you. Do you hope that it allows the reader to realize that their own truth, right, and knowing the importance of recognizing it but not being defined by it?
Yes, I was asked to write an essay for the Daily Mail in London about toxic moms, and I did, and it came out really fast, and it felt cathartic. And just to say that expression, toxic mom, and that it's okay to divorce your mom and to sort of challenge this mommy taboo in our culture where you are never to say anything negative about her, no matter how negative she is toward you. And that sort of sparked a little fire. That article was shared over 500 times. There are thousands of comments, and a lot of them came to me, and the overwhelming majority were, thank you for saying that. Someone's got to start saying this.
Right. Well, I think, you know, the last part I'll read from the book is in Chapter 13, Hot Water. We're back in 1982, and a powerful conversation again with Grandpa when it comes to learning. And this is what you had asked this question, how long does it take for them to learn? And the answer was, it all depends on the individual B, what you say. And then you wrote this on page 257, Meredith. It made sense. I didn't just one day race out of the house and know how to read or do math. I had to go to elementary school down the street and practice. Then when I got older and more confident, I traveled farther on the bus to middle school and studied some more. Soon my circle would widen again when I'd start high school. Like the bees, I learned by trying and failing over and over again until I got it right. I think that's one of my favorite passages. I think that is one of the big things that comes from this. I want to talk about, though, in a larger sense. When you have individuals like myself read that, what do you want them to know about the importance, for one, of realizing how big the world is, but also, two, the importance of exploring it?
I think in today's screen culture, we are forgetting how big the world is. And that was definitely on my mind when I was writing this book. I mean, it takes place in the 70s in Central Coast, California. And that was just a time and place where, you know, kids ran around outdoors all day. And just, that was okay. It was safe. You showed up at dinner time. And if you take just one small piece of nature and study it, and in my case, obviously, the honeybee, is endlessly fascinating how complex their society is and how intelligent their communication system is and how ancient their behaviors are, but they're have been relying on them for 50 million years, and it's been successful. So that's just one little tiny blip of the world that you can fall into. So if honeybees are like that, you know, what about worms or hummingbirds or ants? Or, you know, the world is so endlessly fascinating and instructive. Yet I think what we're doing with our phones and laptops is we're sealing ourselves off from that. And I think people are starting to feel the negativity of that and pine for something different. And so just coincidentally, the timing of my book is sort of hitting a time when, well, a lot of people are diving off of Facebook, for example. They're just realizing that they've lost touch with something that soothes them.
Yeah, and I think that's it, too. I think reminding us of what really matters, right? I mean, and where we can really find so much. I think, you know, for a lot of people who, you know, are reading this book, I think they will not only appreciate what you have been able to do, but I think also realize, you know, what's in them to do. And I think that's one of the great things that can come from this, Meredith. This has been a great chat with you. Again, everyone, author Meredith May has been our guest. The Honey Bus, a memoir of loss, courage, and a girl saved by bees is the new book. It's available through our friends at Amazon.com or through your favorite bookstore. And who knows, you might see her roaming around a hotel around the country. You might catch her
in my bathroom
as well. Right. So Meredith, how can our audience stay connected with you?
They can find me through thehoneybus.com.
Okay. So that keeps it easy for them. Meredith, I hope you will come back. We'd love to have you back on the program again. The invitation will always stand for you.
Thank you so much for your careful read. I love the sections you picked to read, and I'm just so impressed with all your questions.
I appreciate that. Definitely appreciate the time, and we thank your audience for tuning in to another great segment of Conversations Live. If you all came in late, you missed part of the conversation with Meredith. Don't worry. Thanks to our online friends, you all can catch the replay right after we go off the air. The link is already available through our social media sites. So head over to Facebook.com/CyrusWeb or go to Twitter.com/CyrusWeb. If you click on the link there, you can listen to the show completely for free and share it with your friends from there, too. Until next time, I'm your host, Cyrus Webb, saying, as always, enjoy your day, enjoy your life, enjoy your world. Make sure you take out time to enjoy some good music as well as a great book. Thank you all for choosing Conversations Live. Let's make it a great one.